All-time top 10.
Hey everybody.
Hey, welcome back to All Time Top 10. It's been a couple weeks. I am your host, Ben Eisen, and with me today is the lovely Shannon Hurley.
Well, thank you.
Hey.
Hi, Ben Eisen.
Talk closer to your mic there, Shannon Hurley.
Can you hear me?
I think I can, actually.
I've been burned before by talking too closely into this mic.
Oh, I got you right here on the little old mixing board here in the Kill Radio Studios.
Can you guys tell that we're up early doing this show? God. I think our voices are an octave lower.
Hi there. It's early voice time.
It's early and really hot.
Oh, God. Oh.
It's so damn hot. milk was a bad choice. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a scorcher in LA. It has been for like a week now. Just insanely hot.
So we're naked here in the studio, if you guys
Hey-o!
Are wondering.
Not information people needed to hear.
It's not good that I'm sitting butt naked on this chair in the studio.
You might want to boil your butt.
I think I will.
Yeah, you want to sterilize that thing.
Yeah.
That thang. welcome to the show, everybody. Shannon's here, and we're talking 1983 today. Once in a while, we like to do... break down a specific year and talk about why it was so awesome or not awesome in the musical landscape, and you know, and play some awesome tunes from that year. So
everything from that year was awesome. Everything. Yes. Tell me something that wasn't awesome from that year.
Lionel Richie.
Okay, I gotcha. Got me. Okay. Sorry, Lionel.
That's okay. No, he had his moments, but that year it was just a little cheese ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, 1983, I mean, I know for you, it was one of your favorite years because you were like an MTV junkie.
Yes.
In the early 80s.
I could not pry my small eyes away from MTV.
Your eyes were smaller back then?
Yeah.
Talk into your mic, woman.
Okay.
And yeah, and... I did not have MTV at the time, as I'm fond of complaining to people. Because, we didn't have MTV until the 90s. I missed out on all your cool stuff.
You were deprived.
I was a deprived child, yes. It's a tragedy. Anyway, I listened to a ton of radio, though, at that time. And I bought my first records in 1983. Yes. And we're going to get to those bit later. Yeah.
Can't wait to hear that.
83 for me, looking back on it, it's kind of the last hurrah for New Wave. Like a little bit 84 too had a couple of moments, but 83 New Wave was still king.
Yeah.
And everything was kind of devolving. You know, like
you hear a lot of synth pop.
Synth pop and just production value is kind of were way blown out of proportion by the mid 80s. And I don't know. I just feel like MTV kind of went to crap in the mid 80s, and radio went to crap in the mid 80s. And
do
was
you
that
think
way
it was because of MTV that the production and the music everything kind of fell flat?
Yeah, well, later. I mean, MTV pretty much dictated what people listened to at that time.
Yeah,
you know, so whatever they wanted to do, and you know, a lot of the record companies kind of just feeding MTV what they wanted, and it kind of stopped the creative process in a way, you know, it stopped evolving, kind of like what happened with Clear Channel, you know, in the last 10 years or so. And yeah, but this was like the last hurrah. 83 still has some great stuff. We don't have much time today, so let's talk more rock and why don't you go first today?
Okay, my number 10 is There Something I Should Know, which is from my favorite childhood band, Duran Duran.
Duran Duran!
Yeah. The song was actually recorded in 1982, and it was the only new song on the 1983 United States reissue of the band's self-titled album, debut album, Duran Duran.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And it turned out to be the most successful single from it. So nice job, because they added this new song for the U.S. to hear. And
so Duran Duran's self-titled first album wasn't released in the U.S. until then?
Right. Well, I think, you know what? Actually, it could have been reissued.
It was probably yeah, it sounds like a reissue.
Yeah, it
kind
was
of deal.
Reissued. Yeah. That's yeah. what it says here. Yeah. So
cool. And anyone that knows Shannon knows that she's retarded for Duran Duran.
I'm retarded. But you know what? I mean, my love for them has waned, you know, like in the late 80s. I don't know what it was, but I do like them again now, but I don't like all their stuff.
In 83, though.
In 83, they were like indestructible, you know, like yeah. everything they did. Like, I loved everything, all the album tracks, everything. So
well, let's hear it. This is Shannon's number 10 song from 1983. Is There Something I Should Know? Duran Duran.
Number 10.
Please, please tell me now. 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 Thank you.
That's good end of song vamping.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It might go on my list of top 10 end of vamping or end of song vamping.
Samuel Bond was pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. They always had fade outs in their songs.
That's right. That is Duran Duran. And featuring John likes to pop his
John
bass.
Popping bass Taylor.
Pops a lot, Taylor.
Pops a lot. Sir Pops a lot.
Sir Pops a lot.
He did that song, Baby Got Bass.
Oh, my God. Anyhow, I'm going to pretend you didn't say that and move on quickly. My number 10 is the song goes out to Adam Sears.
Oh, I know what song this is.
Yeah. Mr. Sears was requesting this earlier in the week when he heard what the topic was, and I had already had it on my list, believe it or not.
You were one step ahead of him.
Yeah. Adam's a big classic rock and prog rock fan, and a couple of prog rock bands had a nice little comeback in 1983. There was Styx with the Mr. Roboto.
Oh, yeah.
Kilroy
was
here.
Huh?
It was 83. But I was not a big fan of that. I've seen footage of that live tour, and it's just embarrassing beyond belief. They're all put on this, like, you know, space opera production thing.
Yeah, it was a little scary to me.
Yeah.
At the time.
Kilroy. Anyhow, no, I want to play something from Yes, yeah. Because they also had a big comeback that year. Their first studio album in, I believe it was about 3 years, 90215. Was
that's not 90210?
90215.
Is that also is it
90125? Sorry,
is that a zip code somewhere in LA?
Could be. I know it is. Somewhere.
I'm gonna look it up. I'm gonna tell you at the end of the.
Oh my
song.
God! 90125 okay. Is actually the correct album title. Yeah, they broke up and then they got back together to record some songs and just took off. This was actually 90125 was their biggest. I almost said it again. 90125 was actually their biggest selling album of their career, and they've been around since the 60s. I mean, they had so many records. This was the
60s. Wow.
68 is when they started. Okay. This was their biggest one. It went 3 times platinum in the U.S. And this song, which I'm going to play, is called "Owner of a Lonely Heart," and this was their only number one single of their career as well. So. Mm-hmm. A well-deserved time in the spotlight for Yes. And that's my number 10. This is Owner of a Lonely Heart.
Number 10.
Move yourself. You always live your life. Never think
I'm starting to think that maybe this episode was a bad idea because I can see Shannon is getting production ideas in her head.
Yeah.
She's like, ooh, that harp was
all
cool.
The reverbed out voices on that and then the
Whoa.
Harp.
Hey-o.
Yeah. And yeah, nice little touches there. The little bass, you know, slide up and down. I'm going to make you do that on a new song. On a Lovers and Poets song.
Yeah. That's my number 10. By the way, I just wanted to say that that video, I did not have MTV at the time, but that video was just everywhere. Like Friday night videos or wherever it was on. And so I did see it and it scared the living shit out of me.
Are you sure you're not talking about Leave It?
No, I'm talking about Owner of a Lonely Heart where they're chasing that guy on the rooftop. Oh. And it's like... Yeah.
See, that didn't
like
scare me.
It's all Hitchcocked out or something.
Yeah,
scared
that was
the
great.
Crap out of me.
See, I liked that one, but Leave It
was
really
scary.
Scared me.
Yeah, that one was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's really psychedelic.
Trippy. Anyway, that's my number 10. Shannon, you are up.
All right, you just heard a little snippet of it. did I steal this one from you at all?
It is in my alternates.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is Sister Christian.
Yes. Oh.
And
the reason it's in my alternates and not on my list is because it was played on the show before. But that does not mean you can't play it. This was on the top 10 songs about movies playlist. Top 10 songs from movies playlist because it was heavily featured in Boogie Nights.
Oh.
We're talking about Night Ranger.
See, I don't associate it with that movie because I associate the song with the actual year that it was made. So I associate this with sitting out in my car or in my parents' car and eating yogurt and...
was it
wholesome.
Was it Greek yogurt?
No, it was Danone. I don't think they had Greek yogurt back then.
Probably not. Maybe in Greece they did.
Maybe in Greece. I was eating good old American yogurt with blueberry filling
pumping
at the bottom.
Your fist with the other hand.
Yeah.
Motoring. Actually, you need two hands to eat
playing
yogurt,
air drums and eating yogurt at the same time.
Wow. You're going to get that stuff all over the place.
Yeah. So a little thing about this song, the drummer sang the song.
Yes.
Kelly Keegi, he wrote it and sang it.
He wrote it for his sister.
He wrote it for his sister, who Christy,
yep.
Who's 10 years younger than him and was growing up fast.
She's growing up too fast.
Grow too fast. And so the singer for most of the Night Ranger stuff was Jack Blaze, who I thought was pretty cute back then.
Hey.
But, you know, he did not sing this song.
Jack Blaze is cute, everyone. The more you know.
Do 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 do.
Exactly.
And then I got on the Song Facts website, which I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's sort of like Wikipedia.
Yeah,
you can't really.
It's okay.
You take everything with a grain of salt on that website, but it can be an interesting pot of information if you're looking for stuff on songs.
Yeah.
So I found out that the girl in the video was Annie Hubbard, and then I think she even chimed in herself. She's like, I can't believe you guys are talking about this video. I was in it. So she contributed her own little song fact. And I think she's a plastic surgeon in Kansas now, if anybody wants
Sounds
to know
about
that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's all I have to say about Sister Christian.
Yeah, this is a classic, a arena rock classic.
So get out your yogurt and air drum in the backseat of your car.
And if you have another hand, you can get out your Zippo lighter too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sing along too. All right. Shannon's number 9, Sister Christian from Night Ranger, 1983.
Number 9.
Good.
Watch out, price will fly.
That song needs one of those Axl Rose at the end.
Well, you just did it, so.
Or he could say, "Take that one to heart."
No, don't say that.
Oh, come on. All right. Shannon's number nine, Sister Christian. I love that song.
Yeah.
So pretty. All right. My number nine, moving on, is I was saying that in 1983, it was kind of like the last hurrah for New Wave. And this band from that is my number nine is one of the forefront bands of the new wave scene.
And what is that, Ben Eisen?
I'm talking about the Talking Heads.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, Talking Heads had their biggest commercial success. No, it was their breakthrough, because mm-hmm. the Little Creatures, their next album, the one that had And She Was on it, actually mm-hmm. sold more. But this was their breakthrough.
Okay.
They were doing pretty well up until this point, but when Burning Down the House came on,
oh yeah,
suddenly they were the toast of
MTV.
For
sure.
Yeah, that's another video that I have seen since then, mm-hmm. and it's pretty hysterical. I don't know what's going on in that video. There's like people like wrestling for their instruments and body switcheroos, and
yeah,
suddenly there's like some old lady singing David Byrne's part and some little kid who's playing Tina Weymouth's bass or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bizarre.
A lot of superimposed faces on top of other faces, I believe. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Or is that one? I don't remember.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a fun video, and it's a great song. I just love this one. I'm talking about Burning Down the House. Yeah, that was their biggest breakthrough at that point. I already said that. I think it's best just to play the music.
Yeah. When you start repeating yourself, play the song.
All right. I'm doing that right now. This is my number nine song of 1983, Talking Heads, Burning Down.
Good choice.
The house. Thank you.
Number nine.
Ah!
Those guys are so weird. They're weird, man. Weird. I think so. I read this thing about David Byrne back before, you know, back in his college days. He was a performance artist. Him and some guy back in their college, where their college campus, used to just go out in like the campus square and do crazy performance art stuff, like hang themselves from a pole, like by nipple clamps or something.
Huh.
Like all these crazy body mutilation stuff.
Yeah, well, he was a true performance artist.
Oh, yeah, have you ever seen Stop Making Sense?
Yeah. That gave me like a mini crush on David Byrne after I saw that.
Hey.
David Byrne in his big suit.
What a weirdo. All right, that's my number nine. Shannon.
What a cute weirdo. All right.
All right, fine.
Number eight. I keep thinking, oh, I wonder if I stole this from you. And I won't know until I actually tell you, because we don't look at our list together beforehand. So,
yes.
Number eight is Billie Jean.
Mm-mm.
No? Oh, my God.
You know why I didn't?
Because the actual album was released in 82.
82.
But the single was released in 83.
Yeah, we had a little debate about the parameters a couple days ago. And I said, it's supposed to be released in 83. But she like said, screw you. And I said, okay, fine.
I said, if the single is released in 83, then it belongs in 83.
In your opinion.
That's right.
But, you know, I mean, Thriller was everywhere in 83. I mean,
yeah.
Everywhere. I mean, it was what it spent, I don't even know how many weeks at number one during that year. But like half the year, it was the number one album.
It was the biggest selling album of all time.
Still is.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think the Eagles' Greatest Hits album passed it, and then after MJ died, it reclaimed its title.
Okay.
But Thriller. Okay.
Yeah, and I have a funny story that Quincy Jones had. Okay, so the song was about a girl who claimed that Michael Jackson was the father of her child. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of an autobiographical.
Didn't it happen to Bieber recently?
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right.
It did.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many parallels in Justin Bieber's life, except that Michael Jackson actually had talent.
Oh.
I'm not saying that Justin Bieber doesn't, but...
No, he's just pretty much just said that. And it's
but
okay.
Michael Jackson was the icon of the 80s and
yes.
had the talent to back it up. I mean, really, his songs were just amazing. And so anyways... Quincy Jones says that Jackson found the woman one day lounging by his pool with a bathing suit and sunglasses on. And according to Quincy Jones, she accused Jackson of being the father of one of her twins.
Oh, my God. Wacko.
Yeah. I mean, not even in the case of fraternal twins could that ever happen.
Of course not.
You've got to have one father.
Yeah. Medical science has not duplicated that scenario yet.
Yeah, but maybe it's possible in the future, but this is 1980. Well, you know, this is not the future.
This is not the future. The more you know.
This is not the future.
Ding, 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 ding. All right, let's hear it.
Okay.
Billie Jean, good pick, even though it's... Not
oh, wait, and then I have to also say one other thing is that this is the moonwalk.
Oh, this is where it originated. Where,
yeah, yeah. When he performed the moonwalk on the 1983 special 25 Years of Motown, that's when he did the moonwalk for the first time. So
okay.
That's what
qualifies
is great
it.
About the song, too.
All right, Billie Jean, Shannon's number eight.
Number eight. We'll be right back.
Boy, he should really get that nervous tick thing he's got worked out.
Hey, it worked for him.
No, I know. That's Shannon's number eight, Billie Jean, even though it came out in 1982. Michael Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I have so much more I want to say about that song, but I can't because we have to move on. Yeah.
Real quick, before we do move on, listener Dieter informed us that the zip code 9, or no, the album title 90125 from Yes, it's not a zip code, is the record company's code for their band? What did he say?
It is. 90125 is the label's catalog number of the album.
That's what it is.
Good going, Dieter. That's awesome.
It's so close to a famous zip code that wasn't famous until much later, though. So that's how they get away with it. All right, moving on. My number eight. This is the most successful duo of the rock era.
They've
sold more records than Simon and Garfunkel, more records than the Everly Brothers, all of them. Talking about Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates.
That's right.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. They were so big in the mid, in the early 80s and early to mid 80s. And for good reason. I mean, no one could craft a pop song like Daryl Hall. And no one could do whatever John Oates does like John Oates.
He just does that John Oates thing.
I know. But yeah, they were so good. And they had their cheesy moments, obviously, Maneater and, you know, stuff like that. But
they were the blue-eyed soul king
of pop music.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they came out with the greatest hits album in 1983 called Rock and Soul Part 1. Because that's actually what they called their genre, rock and soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, self-titled.
You need some sort of a category. You know?
Yeah. But, I mean, they were kind of a mix of blue-eyed soul, pop and rock, whatever. This greatest hits album had a couple extra songs on it, a couple new songs. And this was one of them, talking about Say It Isn't So.
Yeah.
And I just love this song. It was inspired by I Only Have Eyes For You by the Flamingos. Mm-hmm. That, like, say, you know,
okay,
that super cavernous reverb.
Shoo-up.
Something like that. Yeah. They have their roots in doo-wop and soul music and stuff. And it really came out in this song especially. I just love this song. One of their 34 charting singles.
Yeah.
34 singles on the Billboard 100. Crazy.
This is a song with a really good chorus too. Like, you just feel it going into the chorus. So I like that. It takes you to a different level.
Yeah, and it's got those really interesting chords that you like.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Let's hear it. This is my number eight. Hall & Oates. Say It Isn't So.
Number eight.
Thank you.
So John Oates wasn't even singing backups there?
No, that was Daryl Hall doing all the backups.
And here, and Daryl Hall wrote the song. He wrote most of their songs.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'd love to know himself. Yeah, I don't know what John Oates' role is in the band, but he's needed because you can't call the band Hall.
Well, we were talking last week, me and Joel Lavelle, or 2 weeks ago, talking about Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the South Park guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He needs somebody to reel it in.
To, yeah, bounce ideas off or something. I don't know.
Who knows John Oates' role is mysterious, but
John
he's
Oates
needed.
Could be replaced by a brick wall.
No,
just kidding.
No, he could not.
With a mustache.
No.
John Oates is great, and that song is great.
Yeah.
So talk about end of song vamping. Daryl Hall's the best at that.
All right. Now transitioning to my number six.
Seven. It's your number seven, actually. Isn't it?
Oh, you're right. Okay, never mind.
Hello.
I am.
You're jumping
ahead
the
of
gun,
myself,
girl.
Okay. Well, this song is a crazy, bombastic, dramatic piece.
Sounds and like straight out of the mid '80s.
Mid '80s. Yeah, it was written by Jim Steinman. He wrote all of Meatloaf's hits, including "Paradise" by the Dashboard Light. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And "I'll Do Anything for Love," but I won't do that. This song uses elaborate production and is. It apparently was very long running at 6 minutes and 51 seconds, but we have a pared down radio version of the song.
Yeah.
So
this song could have been sung by Meatloaf very easily.
Very easily.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was actually written for him.
Really?
It was written for him, but for financial reasons, his company wanted him to write his own songs for the album.
What?
So this song went to Bonnie Tyler. And also, Making Love Out of Nothing at All was also written by Jim Steinman, and it was supposed to be sung by Meatloaf, but that was given to Air Supply.
Huh. What about, there's another one from that same era. What am I thinking of? Is it I Need a Hero?
I Need a Hero?
Isn't that Bonnie Tyler?
Oh.
I Need a Hero.
Oh, it could have been. I think that might be.
Sounds like another Meatloaf, Jim Steinman thing.
Yeah, it could have been. And
the record company said, we want you to write your own songs, even though we sold a billion records with this formula that we got.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I know, but imagine it being sung by Meatloaf. That would be totally crazy. But I really love this version from Welsh singer Bonnie Tyler. The song is Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Number 7.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified and then I see the look in your eyes.
Turn around, bright eyes.
Every now and then I fall apart.
Turn around.
Something wild.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit helpless and I'm lying like a child in your arms.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit angry
I can do a total eclipse of the heart. Once upon a time there was light in my life, but now there's only love in the dark. Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart.
Yeah, baby, that's hot. Turn around, bright eyes. I don't know what that means. Shannon's number seven.
Yeah,
Bonnie Tyler, good stuff. That is an alternate of mine as well. Mm. All right, moving on. My number seven, more new wave action.
Yes.
Yeah, talking about the Pretenders.
Oh, good.
Yeah, okay. Their 1984 album "Learning to Crawl" featured this song that was released in 1983 as a single. I'm going to answer that phone in a little bit, but God, all right. You're killing me. Hello? Hello? No one wants to say anything. Okay. The hit single, Back on the Chain Gang.
Cool.
That's what I'm talking about. And it was featured in the movie The King of Comedy and then re-released on that album, Learning to Crawl. Just a great solid song. It's got more of those chord changes that you like.
Yeah, there's something about
great hook.
It's it's a little sad and wistful to me. I don't know why, but it's just really, and
lyrics are sad
powerful.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear it. This is the Pretenders, Back in the Chain Gang.
Number seven.
Of you hijack my world at night. To a place in the past we've been passed out of. Now we're back in the fight. We're back on the train. Chain gang. Circumstance beyond our control. The phone, TV, and the news of the world. Got in the house like a pigeon from hell. Through sand in our eyes and descended like flies. Put us back on the train.
I just wanted to mention that I actually violated one of my own rules.
What?
This song actually was released in 1982.
Oh,
it had three different releases, though. It was released as a single at the very end of 82, released again in the King of Comedy soundtrack in 83, and then again on that 84 album. So,
and say what you were talking about during the song.
Oh, well, two of the band members... in separate incidents, the bass player and the guitar player, about a year before this song was recorded, they died in separate incidents. I think they were both involving drugs, and the band took a hiatus, obviously, and they decided in the end to keep going. And Chrissy Hine and the drummer, I forget his name, but this was the very first thing they did after they came back. So it's, yeah, so you can kind of hear there's like a heavy heart in her voice. Also, one thing I saw that I forgot to mention, in an interview with the Guitar Player magazine in 1992, George Harrison claimed that Back on the Chain Gang utilizes a chord that he had invented.
Invented? Yep. Nobody can invent a chord,
He
can
invented
they?
A chord and incorporated them into two Beatles songs. He says, this is a quote, that's an E7 with an F on top.
Oh, during the bridge.
Mm-hmm. That's an E7 with an F on top, and I'm really proud of that because I invented that chord. There's only been one other song, to my knowledge, where somebody copped that chord. Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders, Back on the Chain.
I'm going to use that. I wanted to use the George Harrison chord.
There you go. He says he invented it.
Okay.
Who are you to argue?
I'll buy that. Yeah. I'll buy that chord for $1 million. Georgie?
All right. I think he'll charge because he's dead.
Sorry.
All right.
What's
your number six?
Quickly on to number six. this song was produced by Nick Rhodes of Duran Duran, along with Duran Duran's producer of their first two albums, Colin Thurston. The song is called Too Shy.
Oh, no.
Yes, we're going to hear Kaja Gugu.
Oh, can we just get this over with?
It's their one-hit wonder. And Limahl, the singer, whose actual name was Chris Hamill, Limahl is just a Hamill spelled backward, of course. he carried on as a solo act, and he actually had a hit in 1985 with Never Ending Story. So for all their, you know...
I hate this song.
Oh my God. Well, then let's get quickly to it.
Oh, my poor ears.
Oh, you're going to love it. Your ears are going to want to dance.
Here we go. Kaja Gugu.
Number six.
Too Shy. Brutal.
Do you feel like you have to boil your ears now?
In separate pots. How's that work? I don't know. I don't think that's
I love that song. I don't care what you say.
All right.